Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to thank everyone for allowing us to come to your home this evening as we're going to deal with some news that you can use. That's right, news that you can use, and we would like to apply some critical thinking as it relates to our environment and our world. We'd like to welcome everyone to Africa on the Move with Brother Africa. Yes, this is Brother Africa calling you, telling you that you must give the people some news so they can use it. And when they can use it, they can benefit from it. And when they benefit from it, it make the whole world and the environment better. So right now, we're just going to have a really open dialogue with Brother Haki and Brother Zabari, who are one of our political analysts who will be giving their perspectives on different kind of topics, things. But later on, you would be welcome to call in at 323-679-0841. That's 323-679-0841 if you have some news that we can use. Welcome, Brother Haki and Brother Zabari, to Africa in the Move. Welcome.
Thank you, Brother Africa.
And Brother Zabari?
Thank you for the opportunity.
Let me see, Brother Zabari. All right. Brother Haki, give our people some news they can use. What's going on in the back of your woods?
Well, ain't nothing going on much in terms of the usual kind of insanity that pervades society. One of the things that's very, very interesting, one of the things that came on the news recently was this notion that your constitutional rights are somehow are in jeopardy. This notion that somehow you don't have a right to sue police, I think on the face of it, is absurd. But anyway, what they're trying to do is that they're trying to undermine your right to sue police. In other words, in the course of suing police, if, in fact, the police has found not guilty, then that gives them carte blanche the right to simply find you guilty of some crime and throw you in jail. Now, the irony is, of course, anytime you go up against the state, anytime you sue the state has a vested interest in protecting itself. And so even though a cop may engage in police brutality, when you attempt to sue him, of course, the judge's job is simply to vindicate the police officer. So in that case, they find the police officer not guilty. In this case, it means that you automatically go to jail as a result of having the audacity to pursue your human and or civil rights in society. I think that's a very, 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 very scary precedent, and I think that people have to be very, very concerned about just how far right this country is going. And when we talk about fascism and, you know, it exists on the world stage, I think the kind of fascism being exhibited here in the United States is by far greater than anything that we've seen in Nazi Germany or fascist Italy. So I think people got to be very, very concerned in terms of what's going on in terms of their human rights in the society.
You know, Brother Haki, I concur with you. And one of the other things I just want to allude to when we're talking about empowering the police or the military industrial complex, all of them is one of the same. I was just wondering that I noticed when I'm going through all these cities now, for some reason now the police is, they are changing their colors in terms of their cars. They're going back to the so-called historical black and white cars. What do you think this signifies, this significant change in the colors, and what kind of psychological impact it may have on folks who remember back in the day how the police force used to be very brutal when they were wearing no colors, black and white, were driving no black and white cars? Why does need to change back to these colors? What kind of messages are they sending to the public today with that change of color?
Well, I think the message that they're sending is that the old way of doing things were the best way of doing things. In other words, in the 30s and the 40s, when you had no real rights, that the cops were treated arbitrarily, you know, to brutalize you without any recourse, and therefore they were free to simply, you know, beat you up and get away with it. Those were, in fact, were what they perceived as the good old days. I think what happens is that this notion in terms of going backwards, or this whole notion of devolution, is one that says that, you know, if we go back to just utilizing force, and if we create a scenario in which people have no real rights, then society as a whole, at least the system as a whole, will be better off because we can do a better job in terms of terrorizing the community and hence more control. So it's a very, very scary phenomenon. But also, I think, just in terms of change, also one of the things that very, very interesting is that when you look at these police departments throughout the country, now they're militarized. Now you have this militarization of the police departments. They no longer wear police uniforms, which is indicative of helping the community. They wear military uniforms, and what they're saying, in essence, is that, you know, the community is, in fact, the enemy. And so this is very, very clear. When you look at these police stations that are being built throughout the country, the community don't have access to those buildings. In other words, it's very, very clear that these buildings are, in fact, operate as fortresses. And in other words, you know, the enemies or the community should not have access to these fortresses. And so these changes are sweeping the nation, you know, throughout police departments throughout the world. And people can be very, very concerned in terms of, you know, the liquidation of your rights, particularly your human rights. And any time you have a situation where says that the police, by virtue of being militarized, you know, have a right to kill all they perceive as an enemy, which in fact is the community. So I think people got to be very, very concerned about, you know, this kind of prejudice that happened in society.
Point well said. Let's go to our brother Jabari. Brother Jabari, what kind of news can you give the people that they can use? What's your news we can use, Brother Jabari?
First and foremost, it's a pleasure to be on the show with you, Brother Africa and Brother Haki, and to echo similar sentiment to what Brother Haki was saying, I think that going back to a black and white cop car sending a message to when we were dealing with the segregation period where basically black people are supposed to know their role, if you know what I mean. There's certain codes that sent as a message to intimidate black people and to keep them in a subservient position. But in regards to news we can use, recently the Boondocks creator put on Facebook that he is no longer a part of the TV series. Now, this is interesting because the Boondocks was a highly successful comic series that originally started out running in the University of Maryland school newspaper when Aaron Magruder was a student there. Eventually, because of his popularity, Cartoon Network asked him about producing a TV pilot, which led to the TV series The Boondocks being produced, and currently it's the most popular show on the network.
So what's your take on that, Jabari? Can you articulate a little bit more on the significance of that?
Absolutely. Well, what is very interesting is that a few days ago, Aaron Magruder issued a statement, and he was talking about how he's no longer involved with the Boondocks, and any information being put on the Boondocks Facebook page was nothing that he had a part in. So it's very interesting that neither Magruder nor the network has issued any statement as to what marked this transition, but it's very strange, and a lot of people speculate that there's potential sabotage, considering this is, you know, his life work. This is what, you know, made him known in the art world for him creating this very politically conscious, satirical cartoon.
Well, I most definitely agree on the last part, Bobby, with you, as one of the things that stood out the most for me when I watched the cartoon Boondock. They sent very powerful messages. They're very political. That whole cartoon raises all kind of level of consciousness, which most cartoons don't. And, you know, like anything, when things start being very political and very progressive, these institutions comes under different kind of forms of attack and be sabotaged. So I wonder maybe
further your point, I can give you another recent example. If you look at what happened with Dave Chappelle with his show, oftentimes he made fun of the black Miss leadership class, and because he was having such a high volume of commentary and he had such high popularity, you know, there were individuals from the 1% that basically told this man, if you don't tone down your show and, you know, you don't start necessarily bringing certain issues to light, you know, we're going to create some problems for you. And that's why, you know, it wasn't that long ago Dave Chappelle took a spiritual retreat to South Africa, because he said that things were getting too crazy, and ultimately, yeah, he ended up walking away from the show, and he gave the network back a lot of money. But it was a certain amount of pressure that was put on him because of the certain issues he was raising, because he wasn't your run-of-the-mill entertainer. As a matter of fact, Dave Chappelle was one of the first entertainers to shine a bright light on how Hollywood is trying to demasculinize black men, because they were trying to get him to do a movie role where they had a skirt in his dressing room. He said, I would never do a role like this. I would not tolerate it.
And we certainly can see that taking place in our community. I think about a year ago, down at Morehouse, the principal had to come out and create, the president had to come out and create new policies enforcing that men cannot wear pumps and high heels and dresses, just so you wouldn't have that kind of, those kind of behavior displays on the campus as it relates to males. So, you know, we definitely can see it begin to have an impact on our people. Brother Hackey, if you have anything you'd like to say on this particular issue of dealing with this new direction or control aspect of the Boondocks and what that may mean, and you know, how do you see one of the things I do know that where we have institutions that we create, a lot of times we create them, but we never put ourselves in a position to protect them for longevity. And this seems like another example in terms of how they make it take over it, co-op it, and change it into what is essence, what it used to be about, to something new and redefine it. But Mackie, you have anything that I can just see on this whole question of of African institutions and people taking it over it and redefine it? Because it seems like this one may be happening to this institution of the Boondocks, who were very, very, was an excellent comics group.
I think actually the situation in society is so perilous. I think that it goes beyond political control. I think we're at the now the realm of little mind control. When I was listening to the situation in terms of Boondocks, it reminds me of what happened to the brother who was nominated by Obama to head the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. And the reason why these white individuals in Congress are so adamant opposed to his election is because of the fact that he had the audacity to implement justice and to seek redress for political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. And so it's very, very interesting. Now, when you look at, in terms of the current Chief Justice, I forgot this guy's name. But in any event, this guy defended the guy who was a mass murderer, and it was no problem whatsoever. But the moment this black man defends political prisoners and just making sure, you know, his constitutional rights are protected, then he becomes the son of non grata as far as the power structure is concerned. They're going to do everything they can to demonize him, to marginalize him, to make it damn impossible for him to be sworn in as the new civil rights division head. So it speaks to a certain amount of, you know, mind control, and that they actually want to control the way you think. So if you don't think the way they think you should think, then, of course, for them, they want to make your existence as problematic as possible. And that's very, very scary. So when you think about the chilling effect, in terms of someone, you know, monitoring, you know, what you say and how you say it, you can understand it won't bode well for people, particularly in the realm of judicial system, you know, that to protect the Constitution, to protect people's rights, to push forward human rights, makes them anathema to moving up in terms of bureaucracy, which means that these people find themselves, you know, as far as the power structure is concerned, on the wrong side of history, and so therefore in need of being demonized. So it has a chilling effect on terms of free speech. It has a chilling effect in terms of the way people behave. Even has a chilling effect on people's perception of reality. So I think that's just part. So when we look at Boondocks, I think it's just par for the course. That if these people can't control it, they can't control the imagery, if they can't control the ideas, then it becomes something that has to be eliminated. So I think it's just par for the course in terms of tactically what these people are doing in terms of maintaining control in a system which is quickly falling.
You know, in terms of making the transition from the two points we just articulated, I'd like to get your feedback on this question, since we are talking about control.
Brother Africa.
Yes, Brother Zivari,
I just want to make one more point furthering what Brother Haki was saying, and that was into another situation in terms of power and control. Recently at Temple University, Professor Montero, black scholar, if you will, very activist-minded, very progressive, he recently lost his position as a professor of black studies after Leslie K. Asante was reinstated, and brothers and sisters in Philadelphia are constantly trying to get the brother back because he has offered a lot in terms of scholarship, and he offers the kind of academic study that, you know, humanizes black people and doesn't try to degrade us.
Okay, point well said. Let's continue on this path of discretion, power, and control. You know, I had a discussion earlier with a gentleman, and he was making the issue or the point that this particular government has now entered into the stage of what many would call fascism. And when we talk about fascism, there's about 14, at minimum, 14 warnings or signs that makes up the behavior of fascism that we all must look at. I'm going to list the 14 warnings, or early warning signs of fascism, and I'd like to y'all to speak to some of them and see if it really has relevance to today. These are some of the early warning signs of fascism I think the masses of people must be aware of. One is powerful and continuing nationalism, disdain for human rights, identification of enemies as a unifying cause, supremacy of the military, rampant sexism, controlled mass media, obsession with national security, religion and government intertwined, corporate power protected, labor power suppressed it, disdain for intellectuals and the arts, obsession with crime and punishment, rampant cronyism and corruption, and fraudulent elections. Now, when we talk about these 14 early warning signs of fascism, they seem like they have already arrived in society. Key, can you speak to some of these points and talk to our people of its relevance? For example, this question of identification of enemies as a unified force. How have that concept been used, for your understanding, Brother Haki, in the present context of U.S. imperialism?
Well, it goes back to the issue in terms of the affirmation, you know, of free speech. In other words, this notion of so much what you do is what you think. And so you have federal statute, which in fact defines speech as terrorism, and so therefore it's all geared toward control. And so in those 14 points that you enumerated, you're absolutely correct. And when you look at currently what's going on in America, in fact, if you look at America the last 10 years, it's been very, very clear that each one of those points that you enumerated on is exactly right. And when we talk about corporate control in terms of society, one of the things is that, you know, people talk about how people are conditioned to believe that government is not important, that government is a problem. But you understand, in any time you have competing interests, you got to have some kind of referee. Government serves as a referee between, you know, the powerful and the least the powerful and those without power. And so without a referee, then you have the powerful have an absolute control over the non-powerful. And so what happens is that government essentially gives its power away to corporate America. So you have a situation where corporate America calls the shots and not the government. In fact, the corporations render government irrelevant. And so therefore, who's to protect the powerless? Who's to protect the people who don't have large sums of money, who don't have great sums of status? Who are going to protect them? Under a fascist system, there's no one to protect them. They're on your own, which means that those in power understand because people are so powerless and they're so hopeless that they anticipate that people rising up. So there's a consequence, then what you're happening is you feed more and more money into the military-industrial complex, not just in terms of military-industrial complexes related to overseas adventures, but military expeditions also within context of the United States, in order to suppress any kind of dissent that may come about as a result of people being powerless, jobless, you know, homeless, and so forth and so on. So you're absolutely correct. So when you talk about fascism, it's important that people understand at what point we are in terms of history. And so we're sincere in terms of, you know, of existing. If we're talking about perseverance, then we got to understand that at some point we're going to have to understand the nature of fascism, and you have to take a stand. There is no easy solution to that, because this is, these are historic processes. And if you don't stand up, then one thing's for sure, you know, there is no middle ground, that the system will run over each other and run over those, you know, who do stand up. So people really don't have a choice but to stand up in terms of confronting this issue in terms of fascism.
Brother Zabari, well, let me ask you if you could speak to this issue of corporate power protected and labor power suppressed. How would you view how they are using these particular tools to dominate their interests?
Well, if you talk about corporate power protection, you have to look at, you can look at a couple of recent business developments that went down involving the website Amazon.com. Now, one thing that's very interesting is that Amazon launched a $300 million deal to help develop cloud technology for the CIA. And basically what the CIA will do, that cloud technology is a way to database they can use for storing records as they research people left and right. Another thing that's interesting is the Amazon CEO is already a billionaire, and he bought one of the more influential papers, the Washington Post. So you see there's something about them wanting to concentrate power among a few, and they really don't want the people to have access to it, because you and I know that a more informed public is always a better serving public, but that's not what the powers that be want in the society, because the less people know, the more likely they are able to be duped into believing certain things. And like you said, with these 14 points of fascism, you know, seeing is believing, because people who are in control of the media are using smoke and mirror tactics all the time, and, you know, by doing that, they're able to convince the people of certain things being real when really that's a fallacy.
Okay, and I like this add to the issue of this corporate power protected. I think one of the good examples was, I think recently the Supreme Court made a decision that they are now viewing corporations as individuals. They should have rights as individuals, and therefore should be allowed to be able to donate as much money as they want into the political campaigns. And I find that very interesting in terms of how they have created another legal way for corporate money to dominate the political process, and then the corporation and individuals. We can treat them as individuals, but yet when corporations are constantly being sued for liability, they still have this concept they call incorporated. So, you know, I think that we need to really take a serious look at the power of the corporation and its unlimited power that it has right now. And this
to your point, Brother Africa, we also have to look at the way most of these, especially the private corporations, are set up. The major private corporations, they are not by any means trying to establish any kind of recourse for the workers, because oftentimes they tell their workers, or they threaten their workers, if you even consider joining the union, that could be grounds for termination. So they don't want any kind of way for the workers to really utilize the power they do have by being human beings. It's a matter of you representing that corporation all the time, and all they want is your labor at the end of the day. And if you fail to meet the labor benchmarks, you know, you're expendable.
But Lackey, can you speak a little bit on this question, disdain for human rights and obsession with national security? I think the two go hand in hand myself. But what's your take on that? What was the question again? Can you elaborate this question of this issue of how they're using this question of disdaining for human rights? They not recognize people's human rights, but at the same time, they also are intensifying this whole issue around the importance of national security. They're hiding behind the shield of national security.
Yeah, well, I think the implication is that you have the rights to exist to a certain point. To the extent that your rights elucidate or confirms or crystallizes or make it clear to people in terms of what the injustices are, then it crosses that line in which you become a threat to the system. And so therefore, you know, the whole question in terms of human rights is something that essentially given lip service. In fact, human rights only exist to the extent that it doesn't threaten or it doesn't expose the system for what it is. And so I'm not surprised that you find situations where the government would then therefore come at you when you dare take a stand, when you dare to make it clear to people in terms of exactly what's going on.
Okay, we'd like to let our listening audience know that you are listening to Africa on the Move as your host, Brother African. Feel free to call in at 323-679-0841. We are discussing news that you can use, what's going on in the neck of your woods, with Brother Hackey and Brother Zimbabwe. One of the major sectors of the program is trying to give you a different take on the current realities that are confronting our people and our communities. We have a few minutes left, and one of the things I'd like to get both of y'all comments on is this whole issue of the discipline of this airplane that have taken off over a week and a half ago, and some kind of ways that disappear, and with all this technology, we can go to the moon. How could they just lose an airplane? I don't know what happened to it. Haki, give me your take on that. Are you buying into the story?
I think one thing is clear, that they're using this particular story as a means to hype the population around the question in terms of terrorism. So even though by their own admission, they don't understand what happened, but they're quick to make all kinds of theories in terms of some kind of foul play having occurred as a result of the plane missing. So in my mind, it raises the specter that something is going on in terms of there's a much larger strategy in terms of, you know, why they're alleging this plane cannot be found. And in time, we'll figure out what that is based upon the information that comes on. But I suspect that it's more to the story than what the media is reporting, other than, of course, their attempt to hype, there's this terrorist scare and keep the people scared and ignorant. So we'll wait and see exactly what transpired in terms of, in terms of this plane. Better make some kind of analysis in terms of exactly what really transpired.
And Jabari, what's your take on it?
Well, very interesting, because recently there's been an article posted on the internet about how they're working on new cloaking technology for planes. So leads you to wonder if this was an orchestrated act that has some bigger purpose that we don't know about. But the fact that technology exists, we know in this technological age, you know, there's a lot of things that are possible. Because I remember a buddy of mine showed me a YouTube video about a guy who went and was able to buy drone technology that he used to pull a Halloween prank. And the scary thing is, he's talking about this was just an average, everyday person that had access to some very powerful technology. So that just leads us to the conclusion that a lot of what we see in the movie is going to become reality. You know, it's no longer science fiction, because I remember the author Stephen King said science fiction is the truth wrapped inside a lie. So he's basically saying it's dropping hints as to what's coming. We just have to be aware of it and be diligent about doing our research so it doesn't catch us by surprise.
You know, you only have less than a minute or so left. One of the things I would like to say in terms of this so-called disappearing of this plane, I often wonder why it's important for the mass media to ask the public to call in and to share their views on what they think may have happened to the plane. Why is the interesting one with the audience or with the viewers, I think? You know, it seems like there's some other alternative motives to that. So I find that really interesting when national news is putting out a call for they want to know what the public is thinking and what questions they will have concerning the plane.
I suspect they learned a lot since they pulled off that 9/11, so I suspect they want to be much more thorough in terms of any type of a black bag operation that they perform. So it's very interesting in terms of this whole situation.
Well, to my listening audience today and my guests, Haki and Jabari, we'd like to thank everybody for allowing Africa on the Move the opportunity to come to their home today just to share some information or news that you can use. Hopefully you can take this information and make your world a better world. But more importantly, we're going to give you another way of looking at the world, an alternative. We want to get you information. But we know without information, you cannot think. More importantly, we want to encourage you to join an organization. Clearly. Again, we'll be back on March 6th, same time, same station. We'd like to thank you again for listening to Africa on the Move. Thank you.